Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Iran, Russia, and China are holding a joint maritime exercise in the northern part of the Sea of Oman. The naval drills are aimed at enhancing preparations to ensure maritime security in the region. These exercises come as Iran is expanding its relations with countries of the region in line with the Islamic Republic's good neighbor policy. Iran has always called for constructive cooperation among the regional nations to establish its stability without interference from the West. Now, with other nations like China playing as mediator, we witness an end to the U.S. meddling in West Asia, which has been marred with wars and conflicts. Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have Esha Krishnaswamy, podcaster and journalist, joining us from St. Petersburg. And journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier joining us from Brussels.
This is the Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, welcome to Spotlight to both of our guests. Let's start off with Ms. Krishnaswamy in St. Petersburg. What is the importance of the drills, especially with the continued U.S. military presence in the region?
Well, the most important thing is to understand that the U.S. does more than conduct military drills in the Gulf of Oman. For example, in November 2021, they literally seized an Iranian tanker full of oil and just literally stole Iran's oil. So this is not only a message to the U.S. saying that the way the world used to be in the past 50, 60 years can no longer be sustainable, is the first one. And second one, there's an actual national security concern for Iran, China, and Russia. The U.S. has made it no secret that they want to have a war with China over Taiwan. And just last week, NATO was doing military drills where they fake bombed, where they played a scenario where they bombed St. Petersburg. So it is definitely a way to make sure that these alliances are strong in case things get worse and more progressively aggressive on the part of the U.S.
Sure. Elijah Magnier, over to you now. What kind of message does this trilateral military maneuver send in your perspective?
Well, first of all, look, there are common factors in between the three countries. They are all three under the U.S. sanctions. All three reject the U.S. hegemony. All three don't want to war with the U.S., but don't want the U.S. to meddle in the Asian affairs and want the U.S. to limit its presence away from their country, away from their interest. And they're saying, well, in case of war, we can be ready and we need to collaborate and cooperate and then carry out maneuver. That is not the first time. For Iran, it's the second time, but for Russia and China, this is the fourth time. And with the continuous U.S. threat against China in Taiwan and around China, establishing new bases in the Philippines, this is raising the alarms in China. And because China and Russia have a very close relationship and they have a collaboration on the strategic and military level, and also Iran with the Russian and the Chinese is developing its relationship, turning toward Asia. All that is sending a message that the world can work and can function much better away from the U.S. hegemony. However, if the U.S. wants to interfere in these countries' affairs, they are ready for peace, but also for confrontation.
Back to our guest in St. Petersburg. The Iranian Navy chief, he spoke of these drills. He said, quote, presently the unjustifiable presence of some foreign military forces continues to pose challenges to the region. The issue had to be addressed and handled. What unjustifiable presence is he alluding to?
Definitely the U.S. presence in the Strait of Hormuz along the Persian or Arabian Gulf, depending on your point of view. And the U.S. is very aggressive there. Like I mentioned earlier, they routinely seize Iranian oil tankers, and that is taking away actual revenue from Iran that can be used as hard currency. So, and also the U.S. bases in almost every so many Middle Eastern countries, and the illegal occupation of one quarter of Syria, where they're taking at least 25% of all Syria's wheat and also Syria's oil. So all of these are definitely unjustifiable. And if you look at a map, the U.S. is thousands of miles away, and there is no reason to be there other than to protect their business interests, which, again, is not as justifiable because for Iran, it is a matter of national sovereignty.
Elijah Magnier, what does a stronger bond, something you just mentioned, but I want you to elaborate for us, please. What does a stronger bond between these three nations mean for the security of the region, most notably amidst the so-called maximum pressure campaign that the U.S. has been pursuing against Tehran?
Well, first of all, Tehran, as Russia and China, understand that it is dealing with the Atlantic Western alliance that are getting together, and they are not limiting their activity to the area where they are operating, or to the North Atlantic, or to the Middle East, but also moving toward Asia. And the double standard, when we hear the Americans saying to China, Taiwan is part of China, and we believe and recognize this is one China, and then they supply the Taiwanese with $1.4 billion of worth of weapons, and then they provoke China, inevitably the provocation are already ongoing against Russia and has been ongoing for the last 43 years against Iran. So all three countries are very familiar with the U.S. provocation. And for Iran, it's important to rely on strategic allies that understand the real politics, understand very well where the West is coming from, what is the objective of the U.S. to protect its hegemony, to increase its presence, to force its allies to have nuclear submarines, only to cause a threat against China when China is not threatening its neighbors. And we've seen how the Americans wanted to occupy seven countries in 5 years, and including Iran, but they failed in Afghanistan, they failed in Iraq, and they failed in Syria. So Iran has all the right to be concerned about the U.S. Intentions, particularly with the riots that was hitting the country in the last month, and the declaration of the U.S. officials that they want to free Iran. All these indications, including the sanctions, the non-return to the JCPOA, are proof the West is providing to Iran that they have a very strong bad intention toward Iran, and they are trying to submit Iran, but it's too late, because now with the war in Russia, we understand that there is a very serious challenge to the U.S. hegemony, and it is happening.
Ms. Krishnaswamy, let's look at this issue from a different perspective. It's the second time the Islamic Republic has held a joint maneuver with two major world naval powers at this scale. When you look at the scope of these drills, what does this say about the military capability of Iran, which is almost all indigenously built?
It says that Iran is a very strong player in the military because they built their own weapons, and they're not reliant upon the West or anyone to buy their weapons. And it means that they are ready to fight if the need be. And of course, Iran has made aerial vehicles, but for a while, its slightly weak point has been through the in the naval area, and it looks like they are ramping up so that they're ready in case the West decides to attack on all fronts. And definitely because the Strait of Hormuz is such a pressure point, the West will be looking very closely at it, and I'm sure they will be trying more provocations around the Strait of Hormuz.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
And Elijah Magnier, are the drills an indication of Iran's success in multilateral military cooperation despite U.S. attempts to isolate the country? Is that maybe one of the messages that Iran cannot be isolated?
Well, yes, indeed. We have seen Iran with its advisors working closely with the Russian army in Syria, and we have seen there is a military collaboration, exchange of expertise and skills from the Iranian part toward Russia that China can also benefit from, because Iran has been subject to many wars, many attacks, and for Russia, this is the first time since the Second World War that is facing such a big war. This is for the Russian scale. The Chinese are observing all the lessons from the war. This is why of Iran with two very strong superpower like Russia, China, a prestigious level for Iran, recognizing the position of Iran. And that means that Iran has a lot to offer to these two countries, and that these two countries take Iran extremely seriously. And I think that is the positive side, in a way, of the sanction that forced Iran to be more independent and rely on its skills and the knowledge of its own population and its own scientists to be able and have to the U.S. at the border of Iran and prevent the U.S. and Israel from having hostile intentions toward the country.
Ms. Krishnaswamy, can these maneuvers set a precedent maybe for other countries to forge closer ties and closer bonds in response to the U.S.'s isolationist policies?
Yes, as long as the country itself is independent. Often the way the U.S. works is that it goes and installs U.S.-friendly governments like they did in Myanmar. Now they're trying in Georgia again. And so as long as there's an independent government that wants to assert their national sovereignty, it can set a very good precedent, and perhaps it can, in the future, there can be some kind of mutual defense treaty as an opposition to NATO, which we know doesn't only stay in the North Atlantic. They've attacked Afghanistan and Syria. So I think it is definitely, and it'll also give a lot of countries who are afraid that the U.S. will try aggressive moves a little bit more confidence to go ahead and oppose the U.S. So I absolutely think it can set a good precedent for many of the countries in both the Middle East and Asia.
And Elijah Magnier, having in mind the recent rapprochement between Iran and Saudi Arabia that was mediated by China, will Beijing's links, in your opinion, with nations in the region begin to enhance on the aftermath of this?
Well, this is the first time we see a role for China that is involved in a very complex and complicated and difficult Middle Eastern reconciliation, particularly between two strong countries, an adversary like Iran and Saudi Arabia. And with the success of China, that offer a very worrisome indications to the West that its role, the role of the West, has always been destructive and never managed to reconcile in the Middle East and in West Asia, while the role of China has been extremely successful. And China, I think, played a very efficient role by creating a kind of a platform where both countries could stand on and feel, well, everybody is winning and nobody's losing, and is offering guarantee. And by offering these guarantees, and for Iran and Saudi Arabia to believe in the Chinese guarantee, that already a huge step even for China to take so much credibility. And I think this is going to open the road for other countries, but it depends on how high is the Chinese appetite to continue with this mediation, because the prosperity of the Middle East and the countries in West Asia is very important for China as well. We have the Silk Road. There is a collaboration between the two major countries who are very oil-rich producers, and the Chinese need this energy that it doesn't have, and Iran and Saudi Arabia can produce and can export to China. So that will support the Chinese industry, will support the Chinese initiative to have more courage toward other initiative and bring more countries together.
Same question to you, Ms. Krishnaswamy. Give us your thoughts about the role that China can play in the Middle East in the wake of the rapprochement that it mediated and the reconciliation that it mediated between Tehran and Riyadh.
Well, just today I read that as China just concluded its first big project with Saudi Arabia, where they gave a big yuan loan. So the first thing I can see is that they will be expanding the potential for the Belt and Road Initiative projects. And this will do a lot to remove the dependence on Western hegemony for construction projects that are often not very well done, if they are done at all. And it'll also remove the need for the institutions such as the IMF and the World Bank. So this will strengthen the ability of countries to decide their own fate, because they are not under the same kind of Western pressure as if they were like using the IMF or the World Bank for their development projects. I also think that China is ready to expand the Belt and Road Initiative beyond the original plan. So it makes sense, because when Asia is the biggest continent, and it makes sense that most commerce should be located here, and these projects will only make it easier in order to transmit goods and services. And of course, in order to do that, China definitely needs more and more energy. And having a peaceful relationship with both Iran and Saudi Arabia will definitely ensure that China will get its energy needs met in the future.
Mr. Magnier, Iran has boasted its quote-unquote look to the East foreign policy strategy. Could that also be setting a precedent for other countries in the region to look more towards establishing stronger relations with the likes of China and Russia as potential major global shifts are on the horizon?
The reason why countries in West Asia are not fully directed toward Asia and toward the East rather than the West, because they are afraid of the U.S. sanctions, and the U.S. Proved to be the bully of the world. We've seen during Donald Trump, his behavior and how he was threatening many countries, and Joe Biden is doing exactly the same, particularly with this war between the Americans and the Russians on the Ukrainian soil. So the reason why we see Iran turning toward Asia is that was part of the program of President Ibrahim Raisi from day one, because of his experience with the West, because the West proved to be unreliable even in internationally recognized agreement like the JCPOA. And we have seen how the European, that are the U.S. allies, did not honor their part of the JCPOA, and did not abide by the nuclear deal. Therefore, they proved to be unreliable partners. This is why the Iranian turned toward Asia, and the world is watching. It's watching how Iran is not crippled under the U.S. and EU sanctions. Iran is surviving, has been surviving for the last 43 years, and is doing extremely well by creating further partnership with the Asian countries. Not only is also using the local currency, the Chinese and the yuan and the ruble, and this is what Saudi Arabia has followed suit. This is the first time we see Saudi Arabia exchanging energy, part of its percentage of its energy, in the Chinese and the Russian currency rather than 100% in the dollar. That's a huge step by watching Saudi Arabia also following Iran's step by turning toward China and Russia, maintaining excellent relationship without necessarily cutting the relationship with the West, because even Iran is not saying, I want to cut my relationship with the West, but the West is just not behaving in a respectful way with in relation to the international laws with Iran. So by Saudi Arabia having this kind of rapprochement with Iran and with going to China as a partner for the peace and dealing with the Chinese and the Russian, notwithstanding the U.S. anger and unease with the behavior of Saudi Arabia, that's a huge step that Iran has moved and has shown to the other countries in the Middle East that it's possible to do that, and it is possible to do business, and it's possible to do it with countries that respect their deals, and they are superpower like China and Russia.
Ms. Krishnaswamy, talking about the U.S.'s response here, the U.S. National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby said that the drills were being monitored. Now, it's no secret that the U.S. and some of its allies in the past, they sought to create a military coalition against Iran in the region, having in mind Washington's heightened tensions with Moscow and Beijing as well. These joint drills are likely to be perceived as provocative by Washington, won't they?
Of course, but we have to kind of remember what Washington considers provocative is not really something a threat that is a threat to their national security, but something that endangers their position in the world stage. So once you account for what they're considering provocative, you will understand that it has nothing to do with U.S. national security. And I've read countless articles on CNN and every Western press. Like, it's always like something like Iran is provocative because they have ships in the Persian Gulf. So it's always, from the West point of view, it's always not, it's not a national security issue, but a threat to their hegemony. And of course, as more and more countries decide to oppose Western hegemony, they're going to get weaker. And at that point, they're probably going to get more hair triggered with their reactions and see more things as provocations, as opposed to other countries simply deciding to assert their national sovereignty.
All right, and very briefly, if you may, Mr. Magni, address the issue. We're going to have to wrap up the show pretty soon.
I think the seas is not under the U.S. Hegemony, is not U.S. control. The U.S. dominance is over. Today, there are serious challenges to the U.S., China and Russia, Iran, other countries in Latin America. India is stepping up. There are many countries, more than 70% of the world population, who disagree with the U.S. This never happened before. Today, we see a big split. We see more awareness among the population who understand the game of the U.S. and can watch the U.S., how it's falling from its empire, because no empire manages to stay for very long.
All right. Thanks a lot, podcaster and journalist Esha Krishnaswamy, joining us from St. Petersburg, and journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnia joining us from Brussels. Thanks for contributing to the program, and a special thanks to you for staying with us on Spotlight.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll try to have a look at the commentary of Chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode. Now, please, let's listen to 187, 188, 190, and 191st verses of this very chapter.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
فأسقط علينا كسفا من السماء إن كنت من الصادقين.
So cause to fall upon us fragments of the sky, if you should be of the truthful.
قال ربي أعلم بما تعملون.
He said, My Lord is most knowing of what you do.
فكذبوه فأخذهم عذاب يوم الظلة إنه كان عذاب يوم عظيم.
And they denied him, so the punishment of the day of the black cloud seized them. Indeed, it was the punishment of a terrible day.
إن في ذلك لآية وما كان أكثرهم مؤمنين.
Indeed, in that is a sign, but most of them were not to be believers.
وإن ربك لهو العزيز الرحيم.
And indeed, your Lord, He is the exalted in might, the merciful.
فَأَسْقِطْ عَلَيْنَا كِسَفًا مِنَ السَّمَاءِ إِن كُنْتَ مِنَ الصَّادِقِينَ. Therefore, cause a piece of the sky to fall on us, if you are of the truthful. قَالَ رَبِّي أَعْلَمُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ. He said, My Lord knows best what you do. فَكَذَّبُوهُ فَأَخَذَهُمْ عَذَابُ يَوْمِ الظُّلَّةِ. They belied him. Then there seized them the chastisement of the day of shadow. إِنَّهُ كَانَ عَذَابَ يَوْمٍ عَظِيمٍ. Verily it was a chastisement of a grievous day.
Now, dear listeners, as you were previously with us, the story of invitation of Prophet Shu'aib started when he introduced himself as, I am a trustworthy messenger, إِنِّي لَكُمْ رَسُولٌ أَمِينٌ. You have to be in awe of Allah, you have to obey me, and you have to obey me because I am not asking you any recompense for it. Now, his main reason to criticize the people was that the people of Shu'aib, Ashabul Ayka, were a group of people who were cheaters. They used to defraud people, and he ordered them, وَزِنُوا بِالْقِسْطَاسِ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ. And at the end, he commanded them, وَاتَّقُوا الَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ وَالْجِبِلَّةَ الْأَوَّلِينَ. You have to be in awe of him who has created you. You have to fear him. The one who has created you is the very one who has created the generations before you and the generations to come after you. But these people did not listen. They, in response, said, إِنَّمَا أَنْتَ مِنَ الْمُسَحَّرِينَ وَمَا أَنْتَ إِلَّا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُنَا. They said, you are only of those bewitched. They used to justify their actions, and you are nothing. You are just like a mortal like us. Why do we have to listen to you? But in response, they said, فَكَذَّبُوهُ فَأَخَذَهُمْ عَذَابُ يَوْمٍ عَذِيمٍ. They denied him, and as a result, the chastisement of the Day of Shadow overcome them. Now, what did they ask for? فَأَسْقِطْ عَلَيْنَا كِسَفًا مِنَ السَّمَاءِ إِن كُنْتَ مِنَ الصَّادِقِينَ. Cause a piece of the sky to fall on us if you are only of the truthful. And in response, he said, قَالَ رَبِّي أَعْلَمُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ. My Lord knows best what you do. We will discuss these verses after a short break.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So what they mainly wanted is that they asked him to send the chastisement by which he threatened them so that he could understand that they are not afraid of these threats. But the only answer Prophet Shu'aib عَلَى نَبِيِّنَا وَآلِهِ وَعَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ gave them for those inconvenient statements about their indecency and those, of course, bad words and indecent words that they asked for divine punishment was this. قَالَ رَبِّي أَعْلَمُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ. He, Shu'aib, said, my Lord knows best what you do. Now, what Prophet Shu'aib implicitly says is that Allah knows best of what you deserve. Whenever He, subhanahu wa ta'ala, finds that you deserve for a chastisement, He may send it down over to you. And at last, the time of wiping the earth from these polluted ones came. And the Holy Quran says, فَكَذَّبُوهُ, they belied him, فَأَخَذَهُمْ عَذَابُ يَوْمِ الظُّلَّةِ. As a result, there seized them the chastisement of the Day of Shadow. Now, as the tradition suggests, for 7 days, a blazing heat overtook their land, and there existed no wind at all. Suddenly a piece of cloud appeared in the sky, and there blew a breeze. They hastily came out from their own houses, and since they were uncomfortable because of heat, they went under the shadow of the cloud. And at this time, a fatal thunderbolt was created by the cloud. It was a thunderbolt accompanied with a very loud sound that followed by a falling fire over them. And simultaneously, an earthquake shook the earth when all of them were annihilated. We will continue our discussions of these verses in the next episode. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Goodbye.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The Israel Apartheid Week has started in Gaza and in many cities around the world. This is aimed at mobilizing grassroots support for the BDS campaign to isolate apartheid Israel in the global community, replicating the resistance movement against the South African apartheid.
Killing machine of apartheid Israel.
The week started with a message of solidarity to the Palestinians of the Gaza Strip from Mandela Mandela, the grandson of the South African leader Nelson Mandela.
We feel your pain and suffering and stand in solidarity with you in the struggle against the injustice and brutality imposed by the apartheid Israeli regime. We salute our heroes and martyrs of Gaza, and the ordinary men and women, youth and children, who daily face the brutal killing machine of apartheid Israel. You are not alone.
As part of its events, the BDS chose to screen a movie about horror experienced by a Palestinian young girl during the Nakba. The ethnic cleansing of Palestinians by Zionists in 1948.
Well, I think the way Israel reacted to Farha is very typical of Zionist propaganda. They wanted to suppress the Palestinian voice. They didn't want us to tell our own narrative. And I think the best way of confronting this campaign of hate and racism is by producing more cultural products.
Palestinian institutions play an important role in informing people of the history of Palestine through different mediums in order to build a generation that is capable of reclaiming its rights.
I think that the new generation is passionate about learning the truth and the history of the struggle, because during their entire life they have experienced both physical and structural violence perpetrated by the Israeli occupation. They want to know why they suffer, are not allowed to travel, and live in poverty. All this leads them to question the roots of all the problems.
The BDS movement has stressed the need to press ahead with the campaigns against the Israeli apartheid, especially because the regime has intensified its persecution to maintain a system of settler colonial oppression and domination over the Palestinian lives and land.
Recently, we witnessed a growing solidarity with the Palestinian people, especially when the new far-right fascist cabinet took office and Israeli massacre increased in the West Bank. We aspire to reach the international community, not only in the civil global community, to boycott, divest from and sanction Israel.
In Israel Apartheid Week, Palestinians reaffirmed their commitment to resisting occupation, exploitation, oppression and apartheid like any other people, by all means permitted under the international law and the UN General Assembly resolution, which includes armed struggle. Ula Al-Asi, Gaza.
On Thursday, a delegation of survivors and victims' families from last month's migrant shipwreck at Cutro in southern Italy met with Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani. On February 26, over 80 people died after a rickety boat with about 200 migrants on board broke up in rough seas. 33 of the victims were minors. At least 16 people are still missing and feared dead. The shipwreck was one of the worst migration disasters in recent European history. No journalists were admitted at Thursday's meeting between Meloni and some of the relatives of the victims and survivors of the Cutro tragedy.
There must be a joint effort with other European countries when it comes to rescuing migrants in danger at sea. If the EU does not take concrete responsibility in governing the migration phenomenon, more tragedies will take place. Let's not forget that this massive influx of migrants began when Gaddafi was overthrown and killed in Libya in 2011.
In the past weeks, Italy has seen an increase in attempts to cross the central Mediterranean in a new shipwreck that took place about 100 miles off the Libyan coast. Between March 11 and 12, at least 30 migrants went missing and are thought to have died. The rescue operation was partially coordinated by the Italian Coast Guard. During a Q&A session in the lower house of parliament on Tuesday, Meloni and her government were accused of failing to offer timely assistance to smugglers' boats in distress and, in more general terms, of not doing enough to try and save people attempting to cross the Mediterranean Sea.
Not only Italy did its part, but it did it in an area outside its jurisdiction. The operation had been initially coordinated by the Libyan authorities.
Once and for all, Libyan authorities are not capable of providing safe and rescue assistance to migrants in line with international standards. The question here is if Italy is doing all it can to save human lives.
Since day one of its mandate, the Giorgia Meloni government has pledged to press ahead with an agenda aimed at stopping what it calls illegal migration. In January, the officials introduced a new code of conduct for humanitarian ships, making it much harder for NGO-run vessels to rescue migrants lost at sea. Lately, Rome has even tried to pass the buck on to others for the current Mediterranean migrant crisis. Earlier this week, the Italian government said the Russian private military company Wagner was behind the recent exponential surge in migrant boats from African coasts. The number of migrants reaching Italy's shores so far this year exceeds 20,000. Max Civili, Rome.
Chinese and Russian vessels have entered Iran's territorial waters to hold a joint maritime exercise in the Sea of Oman. Delegates from Pakistan and Kazakhstan navies will also be there as observers. China has dispatched a guided missile destroyer to the area, while Russia has sent a naval group that consists of a frigate and a medium sea tanker. At the first stage of the drill, the naval officers of the three countries reviewed episodes of the trilateral exercise on maps, received instructions, and held tactical briefings. Later, the naval commanders of the three countries held a joint presser. The Iranian Navy's deputy commander said the main aim of the joint exercise is to help safeguard security in the northern part of the Indian Ocean.
The northern part of the Indian Ocean is one of the most important maritime routes for international trade and transfer of energy. Therefore, providing security in combating piracy and terrorism requires cooperation among regional countries and allies with common interests in this region.
Meanwhile, Chinese and Russian Navy commanders said the joint exercise further demonstrates the preparedness of the participating countries to maintain security, and it will also deepen their practical cooperation. In an exclusive interview, Rear Admiral Tajuddini told Press TV that the trilateral drill helps protect peace and stability in the region.
The trilateral exercise of Iran, China, and Russia has a four-year-long history, and our goals are clear. Our motto is, together to provide peace and security. Therefore, we are only pursuing the interests of the Islamic Republic of Iran as well as collective interests of countries in the north of the Indian Ocean. We are cooperating with China and Russia in order to defend our interests and counter maritime piracy and terrorism.
This joint exercise is the third of its kind, following similar drills involving the Iranian, Chinese, and Russian navies in 2019 and 2022.
The main stage of the Security Bond 2023 exercises will be held in the coming days and will involve forces from the Marine and Airborne units of Iran's Navy and the IRGC, as well as Russian and Chinese flotillas. Mahdi Abbasian from the location of the drill.
Russian President Vladimir Putin held talks with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in the Kremlin. The head of states of the two countries are in constant contact as relations between Moscow and Damascus are developing in various areas.
Thanks to our joint efforts and the decisive contribution of the Russian armed forces, significant results have been achieved in Syria in the fight against international terrorism. This makes it possible to stabilize the socio-economic and domestic political situation. Unfortunately, the Syrian people faced another very serious problem, a catastrophe, an earthquake. This, of course, exacerbates the situation. As real friends, we are trying to support you. As you know, our units under the Ministry of Emergency Situations also worked here, and representatives of the armed forces stationed in Syria are also contributing to the fight against the consequences of the earthquake.
Meanwhile, Assad expressed support for Russia's special operation in Ukraine and thanked Moscow for its help following the earthquake.
This is my first visit since the beginning of this special operation in Ukraine, and I would like to repeat, we fully support your fight against neo-Nazis and old Nazis. I'm talking about the old Nazis, because the West has always received them on the ground and now continues to help them. We support this special operation not because our countries are friends. Our position proceeds from the fact that the world really needs a stabilization now, otherwise it will come to collapse.
This visit has several important components. Syria survived a devastating earthquake with many victims. Syria needs economic help and assistance. Syria has problems with energy prices, which have risen. As an important ally of Russia, it will receive this assistance. The second component is no less important. A meeting of representatives of Iran, Turkey, and Russia at the level of deputy ministers of foreign affairs is to be held in Moscow, where a potential unfreezing of relations between Damascus and Ankara will be discussed. The very fact of such negotiations in Moscow already speaks of a positive trend.
The situation in Syria and bilateral military cooperation were discussed by the defense ministers of the two countries. Sergei Shoigu, in a conversation with his counterpart Ali Mahmoud Abbas, expressed condolences to the Syrian people in connection with the February earthquake and stressed the importance of close contacts, which are aimed at maintaining stability in the Arab country in the field of defense and the fight against terrorism.
The visit by the Syrian president is indicative of strengthening ties between the two countries. The Syrian-Turkish dossier is another important outcome of this visit. The near future will show whether this will lead to the restoration of ties between Syria and Turkey. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
out of classrooms and hospitals and onto the streets. Tens of thousands of the nearly 500,000 striking public sector workers yet again calling for better pay and conditions. The biggest number striking over 2 days this week, teachers, 300,000 of them.
Schools are in crisis because of a lack of funding. There is not enough money going into the schools. It's not just about the pay for the teachers and for the support staff. It's about the basics in the schools.
This is the second time this year teachers walk off the job.
As part of the long-running wave of industrial action that has swept the United Kingdom in the past few months, today it's kicked up a notch in a momentous day of walkouts to coincide with the announcement of the budget by the country's finance minister in Parliament just down the street from here.
Among other things, Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt promised $115 billion in cost of living support for families. Ahead of the walkout, the teaching unions were asked by the government to call off their strike in return for formal talks. The unions said that was a precondition they wouldn't accept.
There's already enough barriers to us taking strike action. It's really hard to actually get a mandate to take strike action. We will talk if a decent offer is put on the table.
A decent offer is yet to be made, and in the battle of hearts and minds, striking workers are still winning, with health workers and teachers enjoying the most support. Primary school teacher Chris says the government has some political choices to make.
Teachers don't want to strike. I want to be in school. I want to be with my class today. So I certainly hope there won't be strikes, but there may be more strikes if the two sides can't make an agreement.
Cost of living protests and walkouts in the UK have been going on for months now, with strike fatigue nowhere in sight. Syed Purizza, London.
Several days ahead of the holy month of Ramadan, Kabul residents flocked to the city center to purchase food and necessities for fasting. Afghan markets usually witness a spike in food prices before Ramadan, but this year the situation is much more challenging. Many Afghan families are running short of food amid deepening inflation, unemployment, famine, and poverty.
Ramadan is a blessed month, and Muslims do their best to make full and special preparations. Unfortunately, this year, people are facing an economic decline with little purchasing power. They need rice, flour, oil, beans, egg, and dairy, but many will have to rely on a piece of bread and water this Ramadan.
I was employed only 4 months out of this entire year. I didn't have an income for 8 months. Today, I came to the city center to buy some food items in preparation for fasting the month of Ramadan. But as I saw the prices, I felt like I can't afford anything. The prices have skyrocketed and our cash has less value than before. I think this Ramadan will be the hardest.
This is the second Ramadan since the Taliban took power in August last year, following the catastrophic withdrawal of the U.S. The country's heavily aid-dependent economy, mostly funded by international donors, has been in chaos since the Western countries suspended humanitarian aid and froze Afghan assets.
We used to have an aid-dependent economy. After the political change, it started to crumble as the Western countries cut their aid. Furthermore, economic sanctions and banking restrictions were imposed on Afghanistan. This resulted in people losing their jobs and many factories and small businesses shutting down. In my opinion, the West is committing a crime against humanity in Afghanistan, pushing millions to starvation and death.
According to the United Nations Response Plan, in 2023, two-thirds of the Afghan population need humanitarian assistance. That's a record number of 28.3 million people. This will require funding of $4.6 billion, making it the highest humanitarian requirement in the world. Ramadan is a month of celebration, unity, and compassion. But people in Afghanistan will mark the holy month under the shadow of multiple crises. They are awaiting solidarity and support from the international community. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
A scandal involving a Quran desecration at a school in northern England has continued to escalate, despite the resolution of the affair by the local community. With a local mosque and its imam facing a sustained onslaught by right-wingers in the press and government too. Hafez Mohammed Mateen Anwar played a prominent role in easing tensions after news spread across the community of a Quran desecration by students at Kettlethorpe High School in Wakefield. When the news went viral, talk of an alleged death threat and a street protest erupted. Mateen Anwar offered up his mosque to the school and police as a location for a community meeting, an opportunity to clear the air, lay out the facts, and end the matter once and for all.
So behind me is the local mosque where the meeting took place. Now, as far as the local Muslim community are concerned, the situation was dealt with amicably and ended on good terms, with communication playing a big part in making the difference. However, it seems as if the government and also certain right-wing elements within mainstream media appear to be deeply unhappy with the way the story played out.
The meeting successfully resolved the affair, with police, the school head teacher and one of the students' mothers all in attendance. But instead of celebrating the peaceful conclusion, the British press ran with inflammatory interpretations of the story.
The police acted, recorded it as a non-crime hate incident, and the boys were, the four pupils were suspended. So that shows that we now have de facto blasphemy laws in the UK.
The mosque is now under investigation by a charity watchdog, while Mateen Anwar has been accused of stoking the row. He is also being portrayed as an extremist over Islamic views he's expressed in the past. Press TV spoke with the embattled imam, who blasted the media for peddling misinformation, such as forcing the mother of a student to attend and apologise.
What's the purpose of that meeting? The purpose of that meeting, Robert, was to let the community know that what you're seeing on social media, these lies, they're not true. Out of those students, one of their mothers, in fact, contacted our team on her own accord and explained how she felt, and she in fact herself invited our team to her home address by her own choice. The mother attended the mosque and wanted to sort of relate to the community about how she felt. A number of points were addressed on that meeting, which then led to a really amicable conclusion to this. There's a number of statements I've come across, statements from ministers, statement from the education minister himself, and a number of other political figures, people of media background, who have sadly just followed onto this tangent of lies and continue to progress that further without actually trying to investigate the truth, which is sad. It's really a sad reality that they've not actually investigated what went about. We were successful, Robert, in stopping a demonstration which could have led to further incidents. We were responsible for the reinstation of the children back into the school.
The imam added he's exploring legal options to challenge what he says is an Islamophobic smear campaign against him by right-wing elements who are deeply unhappy with British Muslims successfully standing up for their faith. Robert Carter, Wakefield.
چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah.
Imam Khomeini suggests that several practical remedies for curing